Okay, we're on the record. This is the Senate Resources Committee. Today's date is March 13th, 2009. With us are Senators Stevens, Stedman, McGuire, online, Senator French, and myself, Wolakowski. Senator Huggins is excused. And first up is Senate Bill 121. And we have a CS on your tables, and I'm not sure if it's in the packets or not, but on your tables is a committee substitute and an explanation of the changes. And if I could have a motion to adopt CS for Senate Bill 121/W.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Any objection? Okay, the CS is adopted. Online, we have Shelley Morgan from my office. Shelley, are you there?
Hi, yes, I am. Thank you.
Okay, great. Could you just briefly remind us what the bill does very briefly and then go through the changes to the CS?
Yes, I can. I'd like to thank the chair and the committee for giving me the opportunity to provide a quick review of Senate Bill 121 and the changes made since it was last heard on Monday, March 9th. Senate Bill 121 will decrease the cost of operating state facilities by reducing the amount of energy consumed by public facilities over the next 15 years. This bill enables the state to lead by example in the arena of energy efficiency and better positions Alaska to receive federal stimulus funding for the state energy program grants. By prioritizing energy retrofit projects and using performance contracts, the state can begin saving energy right away and reduce its operating costs for years to come. I would like to emphasize that performance contracts require no upfront payments from the state. Performance contractors perform energy audits for facilities and make whatever construction changes are needed for the energy retrofit. They are paid solely through the energy savings the state accrues over time. These guaranteed savings are paid to the energy service company for the retrofit, and within 15 years or less, cost savings from efficiency upgrades go directly to the state, saving public funds. Without performance contracts, retrofitting all public facilities would be so expensive that we just wouldn't be able to do it. The Department of Transportation's first performance contract of only 8 buildings resulted in a savings of $365,991 based on 2006-2007 rates, which would be $557,096 based on 2008 rates. Within the first year, the savings from just these 8 buildings could essentially cover the annual staffing and travel requirements found in the fiscal note from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. If the state executed just 25 similar contracts, the state could save over $13 million based on 2008 rates in the first year. There are 2 fiscal notes provided by Department of Transportation. One is for doing the work with the performance contracting, which is about $363,600. The other shows the cost to the state without performance contracting, which is over $17 million. It's our intent that the committee adopts the fiscal note based on doing performance contracting, as that is the intent of Senate Bill 121. So with this overview of Senate Bill 121, I'd now like to highlight the changes made to the committee substitute version P, dated from March 9, 2009, that are now found in version W. The following 6 changes were all made based on feedback provided by experts and committee members at the hearing this past Monday, March 9th. All changes have been requested and or approved by the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and the Alaska Energy Authority. The first changes, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities has requested that the database be updated annually rather than every 10 years. This can be done simply by having individual building managers update data based on their utility bills. Basically, the individual responsible for paying the utility bill for a facility could easily enter the utility data into a spreadsheet, and once each year, that data could be rolled up into the database, rather than paying a Department of Transportation staff person to spend hours compiling data on every facility. It would take minutes to put the data into the database by each facility's building or operations manager, thereby decreasing the cost. The Department of Transportation and Alaska Energy Authority staff are working together in preparation of this database. The second change is that all facilities, not just heated facilities, shall be retrofitted and eligible for performance contract retrofit projects. The Department of Transportation asks that all facilities be eligible for performance contracting, regardless of whether or not they are heated, and the section regarding retrofitting was also adjusted for consistency. Third, the performance contracts may also include renewable energy projects. Based on comments received Monday, alternative energy was replaced with renewable energy to better fit with the intent of this bill. When determining the best energy efficiency measures for each facility, the performance contractor may determine that it is appropriate for a facility to generate its own energy using renewable sources. Fourth change is that the reference to the International Energy Conservation Code, the IECC, was removed, and the bill now states that facilities will be made to meet or exceed the most recently published edition of the ASHRAE IESNA standard 90.1 as published by the American Society of Heating, Refrigerating, and Air Conditioning Engineers. For the point of definitions, IESNA refers to the Illuminating Engineering Society of North America. ASHRAE is more typically used for commercial facilities and also does a much better job at addressing Alaska's climate conditions while still meeting the same basic guidelines found in the IECC. Although the IECC embodies ASHRAE, it only recognizes three climatic zones, which is insufficient for the entire state of Alaska. Fifth, the decision to postpone a retrofit due to lack of cost effectiveness was modified to add a provision that this decision may be based in part on whether or not the department would be able to meet a return on investment within 15 years after project completion. The sixth change is that the energy use index language found in section 44.83.955 was adjusted to better define the energy use index and the database. The Alaska Energy Authority shall establish an energy use index to measure energy consumption, and the database they prepare will be made up of energy use index data for each facility. These changes did not alter content, but just provided a better clarity through definition. This concludes my overview of Senate Bill 121 and the changes incorporated into version W, dated March 13, 2009. And I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee members may have.
Great. Thank you, Shelley, and appreciate your work on this bill. And just let the record reflect that Senator Wagner is here as well. Are there any questions for Shelley? Yes, Senator Wagner. Senator Stedman, yes.
I'm just kind of curious, the Rail Belt Energy Fund language allows buildings and facilities for energy conservation that are state-owned to be retrofitted. I'm just kind of curious how often the state has used this and how this is tied into the bill here.
Do you know the answer to that, Shelley?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, the Department of Transportation has done a total of two performance contracts totaling 16 buildings starting in 2004. I think what I see is one of the challenges right now is that there's no method for prioritizing the retrofit. This bill not only allows for and encourages the performance contracting, but also it establishes this energy use index database so that we can identify first which buildings are consuming the most energy and therefore costing the state the most, so that the retrofit projects can be conducted in an order where we're retrofitting the most expensive and biggest energy consuming buildings first. Does that answer your question?
Not really. The Rail Belt Energy Fund allows access to those funds for retrofitting state-owned buildings and facilities for energy conservation, and it appears, you know, it's targeted along the rail belt, but that should be most of our major state buildings. I'm just wondering if that fund was ever used for that purpose and how that language or policy was embedded or not embedded in this bill.
Well, I can probably address that. I mean, as we all know, the Capitol is here in Juneau, and certainly not along the rail belt. And so, any public facilities here or throughout Southeast or throughout rural Alaska would not be included in this under the Rail Belt Energy Fund. To my knowledge, I don't believe money has been used from the Rail Belt Energy Fund for retrofitting of state buildings. What this particular bill does is it number one, creates an energy index, an energy use index for public buildings, which helps the state then prioritize which buildings will be will go ahead and actually be retrofitted first. The other thing is, in terms of how you pay for this, I think it's probably a better public policy and cheaper for the state and less risky for the state to go ahead and undertake performance-based contracting, which is what we're promoting with this bill, because performance-based contracting really doesn't cost the state anything. You have a company that comes in and gives you an assessment of how much energy you'll save, and then it's a pay-as-you-save program. The money that you would otherwise pay for utilities then goes instead to pay for the retrofitting and upgrades in the building.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, Shelley. Is there any further discussion on the bill? What's the will of the committee? Is there a motion to move the bill? Yes, Senator McGuire.
I move that we move the CS for Senate Bill number 121 /W out of the Resources Committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Okay. Is there any objection? Okay, hearing none, the bill is moved. Thank you, and signature sheet. Great. We'll pass around the signature sheet. We'll move on to Senate Bill 31, which is an alternative energy tax credit bill. And Senator McGuire, this is your bill.
Yep. And Trevor, you want to come up? The we have version D, and again, if there was a motion to adopt the committee substitute version D, that'd probably be cleanest, and then I can walk through the changes.
Do you want to make that motion?
Sure.
And then is there any objection to that motion? Okay, version D is adopted.
Okay, so in version D, I'll walk through the changes, starting on page, and this is a result, Mr. Chairman, of testimony that was elicited at the last meeting. And I understand Senator Stevens may have an additional amendment, but these are the changes that we've incorporated so far. So section 2A, we changed the amount of the production tax credit to a graduated system that ties the tax credit to the retail cost of power for a community. The amount of the tax credit will be equal to 15% of the retail electricity rate for a given community. And the tax credit is a minimum of 2.1 cents per kilowatt hour and a maximum of 5 cents per kilowatt hour. And the members will recall that Chris Rose came forward in Monday's hearing and proposed the idea that seemed to be more equitable to the communities that needed development the most. The change ties the amount of the production tax credit to the cost of power rather than the power plant capacities or community populations, which were also other ideas that were discussed. And it has the advantages of a tiered system, but without the arbitrary thresholds. The members will recall that the original bill had a flat rate of 2.1 cents per kilowatt hour, irrespective of the retail electricity rate in any given community and irrespective, obviously, of population. Section 2A2 was removed, and that section was a section that allowed power producers to claim the tax credit if they use the electricity they produce for their own commercial purposes. And the intent of the bill is to encourage the production and distribution of electricity to communities that need it the most. This ensures that power being incentivized by the tax credit makes it onto the grid and into the homes of Alaskans, and that and it addresses the industry concern of power producers claiming the tax credit by simply selling the electricity to themselves in a sort of a cyclical fashion. Section 2B changes the number of years the credit could be claimed from 4 to 5 years, and the committee will recall we've had a number of different periods of time in the bill. The industry experts suggested extending it as much as 10 years, but the concern was that it would add up to massive subsidies over that decade. Half of it seems to be a compromise, and again, this is open to committee discussion. We moved it from 10 to 4 and back up to 5 to reach a middle ground. But again, it's a moment in time. We don't know what the amount of the subsidy will be, Mr. Chairman, obviously, because we don't know what kind of energy products or production we're going to incentivize. So at this moment in time, there isn't a real method of quantifying it. Section 2G caps the aggregate amount of the tax credit plus state grants so that it can be claimed to 10% of the capital cost. And that was the concern that was brought up, that if you have the AEA monies going forward, and so state grants themselves, and then on top of it you have the production tax credit, that you end up with arbitrary results. Those, in other words, those projects that were given an AEA incentive would then be further incentivized at a greater level. So it prevents over-subsidization of projects that are eligible for both the production tax credit and the renewable energy fund grants. Section 2K2 changes the definition of energy producer so that independent power producers are not required to obtain a certificate of public convenience and necessity from the RCA. So that concern was brought up in the last hearing, that really what you're doing is you're limiting the eligibility of project to power plants with a production capacity of 100 kilowatt hours or more. And it was brought up that we may want to be incentivizing smaller projects and those who aren't certificated. Senator Huggins specifically brought that up. Section 2K3 and all sections changed any section, again, that refer to alternative energy to renewable energy, a change, Mr. Chairman, that we made in the last bill that we heard. It's a reflection of, the two terms are used interchangeably, but we're moving toward a more federal definition of renewables, and we want to be sure that the production tax credit program reflects the new change to renewable energy. It's a term of art. It's nomenclature, and we're making a move to make that consistent. And finally, for all sections, we move the tax credit language from 43.98, which is revenue and taxation and miscellaneous provisions, to 43.20, which is the similar title, revenue and taxation, but under the Alaska net income tax. And this was recommended by the tax division. It ensures that the credit is applicable only against the corporate income tax and not any other state taxes that might accrue. Those are the changes. And Trevor, if you wanted to come up as well and be available for any questions, and I'm available as well.
Thank you, Senator McGuire. Are there any questions? Okay, seeing no questions, we've got a few people who wish to testify, and we'll go to the off-nets first. Mira Kohler, are you there?
Oh, I just got unmuted, so I am here.
Okay, hi, Mira. Could you put yourself on the record and offer your testimony?
Yes, I will do that. My name is Mira Kohler. I'm the president and CEO of Alaska Village Electric Cooperative. We are an electric utility, a nonprofit electric utility that serves 53 villages. We also have, we're very proud to state that we have taken the lead in the state on developing renewable energy projects to serve our very small communities. We now have wind projects serving 7 communities, and 2 more are going online this year, and we expect to have 2 or 3 more again next year. I very much support the intent of this bill. A production tax credit is just what we need to incentivize some of these small projects. For illustration purposes, I will point out to you that our most typical project in the last couple of years has been a 300 kilowatt project, which essentially consists of 3 100 kilowatt machines. And we have achieved as high as a 25% to 30% penetration of renewable energy into our diesel systems. A project that's 300 kilowatts in size in a remote rural village costs approximately $4 million, including the control equipment that needs to be put in to interface it to the diesel system. A 5 cent per kilowatt hour production tax credit for a 5-year period essentially would translate to a total credit of $197,000, which is a fairly modest contribution of less than 5% of the total cost of the project. So respectfully, I would urge you to consider retaining a 10 cent per kilowatt hour limit. While the number sounds very large, the actual impact is very small, because a single 300 kilowatt project that I'm talking about, the impact of a 10 cent credit, which would be 15% off a 67 cent retail rate, would essentially just generate another $197,000 in costs over the life of the 5 years of production tax credit. That additional $197,000 essentially equates to 70 50 megawatt Fire Island projects. So, you know, you're going to have a lot fewer large projects that will consume a much larger chunk of a production tax credit than a very small standalone rural electric project possibly could. So I don't think the impact would be that great, so I would certainly appreciate you considering that. Mm. The other thing that I understand is on the table potentially is for this production tax credit to be placed into effect immediately rather than January 1, 2010. An immediate activation date would be very beneficial because, as I said, AVEC has 2 projects that are going to go online this year, and I know there are at least 1 or 2 others, including a small hydro project in Southeast Alaska, that are expected to go online this year, and so an immediate activation date would be very beneficial for those projects. You know, we've all struggled to cobble together funds to build these projects, and anything that we can get to make them more cost-effective makes it much more likely that they will be built. So with that, I will terminate my testimony, and I am available to answer any and all questions that you might have.
Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mira, it's a question I'm a little concerned about, the date as well. As you know, it reads they have to be for this tax credit, they have to be placed in service on or after January 1st, 2010. And I understand your concerns about the several plants. You've talked about the 2 AVAC plants online this year, and you mentioned a hydro as well. This is a substantial amount of money. Of course, you mentioned $197,000 in credits for one operation. Would you see if this were to stay at the same date as of January 1, 2010, that might in fact delay or retard the when you place those plants into service?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, I don't really think that that would occur. However, if we were in a situation where delaying activation of the project by 3 weeks would net another $200,000 towards the cost of the project, we may be inclined to put off that connection, if you will, for those 3 weeks, because that additional $200,000 could mean that you defer operating costs or you absorb operating costs from the system for another 3 or 4 years. So it could be a very material consequence for the project.
Thank you, Mayor. That's what I want to hear, and I appreciate your comments, because I can see retarding just that date, the beginning of an essential service. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. And just on the issue of the 5 cents versus 10 cent maximum rate, I know I had a long discussion yesterday with Trevor, I guess the conclusion that I came to is the 5 cents, the 2 cents is pretty generous. The 5 cents is extremely generous. The 10 cents was a lot. And we sat down and tried to figure out what a 1 megawatt power hydro plant would run in terms of a subsidy. And if the numbers were correct, we were looking at about $500,000 a year in a state, basically, tax credit. Is that right, Trevor?
Mr. Chairman, it would certainly depend on the size of the project we're talking about, but some of the projects we discussed in a community where the cost of power is particularly high, we could be talking about into several millions of dollars for a subsidy, essentially. So,
okay, and that's sort of, at least from my thought process, was every dollar we give in a credit is a dollar less we have in the treasury. So I think we need to be generous in doing this, and I think 5 cents is a real, extremely generous compromise for those high-cost districts, my personal perspective. Any other questions? Okay, let's move on to the next testifier is Chris Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I wanted to echo a couple of the things that Mayor Kohler said. We really do appreciate the fact that this bill is moving forward, appreciate the fact that many of the that were made at the last hearing have been incorporated. Would definitely support the extension or the new date of applicability for this tax credit, because it does make sense to allow those projects that were about to go on this summer to get this credit rather than giving them any incentive to delay. And I would also respectfully suggest that there might be some middle ground between 5 cents and 10 cents, simply because from a proportionality standpoint, 2.1 cents is a relatively low proportion when you're looking at a community that might be paying 30 or 40 cents per kilowatt hour or even higher. So that was the intent of suggesting sliding scale, and if there's any middle ground between 5 cents and 10 cents that the committee might be able to find in terms of the ceiling for the tax credit, that would certainly be something that Renewable Energy Alaska Project and its members would support. That's it. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Chris. Any questions? Okay, seeing none. Next is Dan Stickle from Department of Revenue. Dan, do you have any questions or any testimony?
Hi, this is Dan Stickle with the Department of Revenue, and I'm available for questions on the fiscal note.
Okay, any questions for Dan? Okay, I don't see any at this time, though if you could hang on until we're done with this bill, I would appreciate it in case any come up. And then lastly, we have Tom. I keep getting your last name wrong, Tom, and I shouldn't, but is it Lakosh?
Thank you, Senator. It's Lakosh.
Lakosh, okay. Get it right one of these days. Yeah, if you could put yourself on the record and present your testimony.
Okay, yeah, I thank you for adopting my recommended 15% here. The idea of having the tiered system was a good one, and you can improve upon it now. But there's I think you've made a miscalculation, both the mayor and Trevor, in how this 15% would be applied and would cause you to reconsider the 5 cent limit and the 5-year limit. And it's here that I guess I try to provide that analysis in my comments to the committee. But what happens when you have a 15% of the retail rate subsidy is that as soon as the renewable energy comes online, it lowers the rate at which the utility is charging for its per kilowatt. So you get an immediate precipitous fall in the rate And so the second year when the retail rate is recalculated, the subsidy goes way down because you're now taking 15% of a much cheaper cost. So you don't get the $197,000 that is calculated at the same initial high rate. That high rate that is you're getting 15% of the first year goes down precipitously the next year. So this isn't as large a subsidy as is being assumed, because the rate of electricity cost goes down after the renewable energy is installed. So in order, and I try to explain this, in order to give enough incentive to move to the renewables, you need to have this heavily front-loaded so that because as soon as they produce cheap energy, their subsidy essentially goes away. If they, for instance, the Juno rate, and I provided some numbers here, taken in 2007, I believe was about 11 cents a kilowatt hour. So if a community has a 60 cents per kilowatt cost 1 year, institutes a hydro project and goes down to 11 cents the next year, 15, they immediately go down to the 2.1 cent subsidy the next year, as soon as that hydro project comes online, if they're using that subsidy. So it doesn't provide, much subsidy in the following years as much as the 5 or 10 cents, that is the upper limit. And the same situation happens with the 5-year recovery period. In that, because the utility cost or charge is recalculated every year, the subsidy goes way down as soon as it comes online. And this is a much better bill. I would hope you would have considered subsidizing biofuels, because we have a real problem with heating, using fuel for heat. I think it would be much better than trying to fix tank farms and argue with fuel suppliers to let the communities grow and produce their own biofuels. And that would, substantially augment this electricity production aspect that you're now considering here. I think this is a much better bill. I would hope that you would up the upper limit to incentivize front-end loading. If they get the big subsidy the first year, companies will be competing with each other to fully replace the renewables so they can get that full 10 cent the first year, because in the second year after it's recalculated, the subsidy goes down to 2.1 cents, and they have very much less incentive to go to rural communities with the expensive transport and construction in these rural communities to fully replace the existing expensive fossil fuels. So I appreciate this opportunity to testify. I think you've got a much better bill here. I would also suggest that you up the percentage of the capital cost allowable. I think it's very appropriate that the combination of all subsidies not exceed the 20% limit that you had set for the maximum total subsidy. They should be given that 20%. That's a fifth of the cost. It's extremely expensive, as we all know, to develop any type of construction project in rural communities. Some of these places have to bring big cranes in and to develop wind and all kinds of construction equipment to develop dams and a lot of materials. And 20% shouldn't be out of the picture, nor should 10 years with a lower subsidy rate after the first year and the higher initial maximum 10 cents. I think all of those are needed to incentivize maximum renewable competition to produce the maximum possible renewable power in that first year high subsidy. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Any questions? Okay, seeing none. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify? Mr. Lee, would you please step forward, put yourself on the record?
Yeah, the Alaska test.
Could you just state your name for the record, Mr.
My name is Dominic Lee. I'm the CEO of Little Socina Engineering and Construction. And concerning the tax credit, there are two kind of people want to using the tax credit. The non-profit one, they want to sell the credit to somebody else. But for the profit company, they want to keep it to reduce the tax they have to pay to the state. In our project, which is will be a private for-profit organization, we would like to see the state give us longer term, like 10 years, but half the rate. Instead of 5 years, 5 cents, we would like to see like 10 years, 2.5 cents. Because that will really benefit the one who really want to use the credit to reduce the income tax. And not to sell it away for get some money from somebody else. I think that's one of my main concerns. Another concern is the project we propose has had the funding available right now, but we don't come up with some mechanism to fund that the feasibility study to the Alaska Energy Authority so that they can hire somebody else to do the feasibility study. We were losing the $2.8 billion funding from the Asian investor. And it's very hard to get money nowadays. And I would like you to see you can add this $10 million study to AEA because they love to use it to get the $2.8 billion investment funding to build this tidal dam, which don't cost the state any money. That's what I want to add to it.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Lee. Any questions? Appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else in the room wishing to testify? Anyone else online wishing to testify? Okay, public testimony is closed, and we'll move to committee discussion. Mr. Yes, Senator Stevens.
It's kind of trying to have a definition of on bottom of page 3 that begins to define things. An energy producer A means an electric utility holding a certificate of public conveyance. I understand that. B is an independent power producer producing more than 100 kilowatts of electricity from renewable energy. And just like an explanation of how, I'm not quite sure 100 kilowatts, how many households would that be?
And if I could, Chris, are you online?
Chris Rose, are you there?
Okay, this came from...
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Could you... Senator Stevens is asking a question about the concern that you raised. We also made eligibility for projects, smaller projects for power plants with a production capacity of 100 kilowatts or more. And Senator Stevens is wondering how many households does 100 kilowatts roughly, and I assume you know the answer, how many households does that serve?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, that would be roughly 100 households. You can, for a rough rule of thumb, about a kilowatt per household. So that would be roughly 100 households. It wouldn't be just a single family system.
Thank you.
Yes. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Stevens.
The second issue is I'm concerned about the time and the fact that we have it, it only applies to those projects placed into service on or after January 1st of 2010. And I bring this up from a purely parochial standpoint. Kodiak Electric Association is the one I pay my electric bill to every month. And we, for 5 years, have been working on a wind project, which this summer they put all the concrete in for three windmills up on Pillar Mountain. And the coming summer, they will install the towers and the propellers and all the stuff. And so it should be in operation in September. They've been planning this for 5 years. And the way this is written, they would miss the opportunity to receive a tax credit by 3 months. And my concern is that maybe the best reaction, as was indicated by Mayor Kohler, that the others might look at it is, well, then if we're ready to go on September 1st and we wait till January 1, we get a tax credit, which really amounts in Kodiak to about $1.2 million. Then they keep it, you know, they build it, it's ready to go, but they don't turn it on until 3 months later. Is that really what we want to do? Is that the goal here, to retard the production of wind power? I don't think it is. So it does seem to me that it would make sense to make this a July 1st date, which would getting many fiscal years, and might also affect others. There are other plants out there, or other operations that are coming on about the same time, smaller ones. The one in Kodiak is the largest of the operations. It'll be the first large ones, I think, in Alaska, and followed by others like the one in Anchorage. So it'll be a good way to figure out if it really does work and how it works. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that we, on lines of page 2, line 14 and 16, that we change those dates to July 1st, 09.
Okay, there's a motion on the floor. Is there any objection to the motion? Okay, seeing none, the motion is adopted. Any other discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I just want to say very supportive of Senator Stevens' amendment, and the guys came in from Kodiak. It looks really exciting, and you can see where when you put tax incentives in place, you could have absurd results, and we certainly wouldn't want to impede the timetable for that renewable energy project, and are excited to see how it works. And I appreciate all the members on this committee's support in helping us start out as a geothermal tax incentive bill, and I think it's really exciting. It's grown to reflect a lot of different renewable sources of energy, and all of our regions have frankly been reflected through our work. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And I just will just say I think this started out as a good bill, and I think it's now an excellent bill. I think the committee process really worked on this bill. Senator Stedman.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, before you get too excited about perfection. At some point, maybe at the next committee, we can take a look at potentially wood as a renewable issue, too.
Okay.
And see how that may or may not factor in here.
And I guess I was about to add to my statement that I'm sure this hasn't seen the last of its perfection changes.
We know Senate finance is perfection.
Yeah. Sure. Is there a motion on the bill, or is there any further discussion?
So, Mr. Chairman, I move that we move out the CS for Senate Bill number 31/D as amended today here in committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Is there any objection? Okay, the bill's moved. Okay, next up is Senate Bill 58, establishing February 2nd as Marmot Day. We have Marilyn Lane and Debbie Prater from Senator Menard's office. If you could please step forward and put yourselves on the record. Please identify yourselves and then state your testimony.
My name is Debbie Prater, and this is my first time on this side of the desk. I'm a committee aide for Senator Menard, and I'm very sorry she couldn't be here with us today. She'd love to have been here, but we'll try to do a good job.
And I am Marilyn Lane. I am Senator Menard's chief of staff.
Go ahead.
Senate Bill 58 is an act establishing February the 2nd of each year as Marmot Day, and it will create a localized Alaska version of Groundhog Day. While many people in the lower 48 every February 2nd honor Punxsutawney Phil or some other incarnation of the famous groundhog, Alaska residents don't really have that same representation. The Marmot Bill, SB 58, solves that, giving school children, public institutions, and even adults the opportunity to use local hire, the marmot, as their symbol. Marmot Day can be celebrated in a number of ways, from special events at the Alaska Zoo to school celebrations with an educational angle, so that children can learn more about Alaska's furry little ground squirrel. Already, the Marmot Day has received support from the Alaska Zoo and the Mat-Su Borough School District. I'm sure that most of you are aware that about 20 years ago, Senator Menard's husband, who passed away last week, Senator Kurt Menard, was a representative at the time, and he presented this bill. And it got a lot of ribbing, and it still does, but I have a copy of a newspaper article I'd just like to close and read a quotation from Senator Kurt Menard. A lot of them are saying it's a joke thing, but there's a long-term value in terms of tourism. I thought it would give some promotion to the zoo. There's a town in Pennsylvania where the official groundhog lives. They built a big tourist industry on that little critter alone, selling t-shirts and all kind of knickknacks. People go there for souvenirs. We've always said that we're different. If we're going to be different, we don't have to drag all these traditional things up from the lower 48. We hope you will support Senate Bill 58.
Great. Thank you. Are there any questions for the bill sponsors? Yeah. Okay. Seeing none. Is there anyone online for testimony? I don't believe we have anyone online. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify? No one in the room.
Would you like a motion, Mr. Chairman?
I guess we'll open it up for committee discussion. Or
Mr. Chairman?
This is like the bad guy that whipped his children. I'm not going to go there.
I'll make a motion that we move Senate Bill number 58, an act establishing February 2nd as Marmot Day, /R out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying good cheer and zero visit loads.
Any objection to the motion? Okay, seeing none, the bill is moved. And with that, we're adjourned.